So now we're doing Revi, and Revi for a double parsha means that we should do Revi of Tazria and Revi of Mitzora. So in the brief time we have, we can't really cover all of both, although Tazria is a briefer Aliyah by far. So instead, we're also looking for a synergy with Yom HaTzmaut today. So I'll first mention, just on behalf of Parshas Tazria, which really applies to Mitzora as well, so we know that they both share the theme of Lashon Hara. And I sometimes joke there's a conflict of interest between the rabbis and the Baal Kore as far as whether Tazria and Mitzora should be combined or separate, because the Baal Kore for sure wants it to be separate, doesn't want it to lane so much in one Shabbos. But the rabbis are happy when they're combined, because nobody wants to darshan about leprosy 2 weeks in a row. But the truth is, it's not really we understand about leprosy, though we perceive it as all being a reference to certain averos, most prominently Lashon Hara. Not only Lashon Hara. The Gemara tells us that Nagayim are associated with a lot of different averos, but Lashon Hara is the most well-known. And therefore, it's taken as an opportunity to focus on that, which is always in vogue, always needed. You can never speak enough Lashon Hara, so having the two parshios back-to-back, or in the same parsha, or after each other, we'll never run out of things to focus on. So just a note for a moment, on the occasion of Yom HaTzmaut, that there is a very strong connection between two prohibitions, if there may even be one prohibition, that we have a prohibition of Lashon Hara, that we're not allowed to talk badly about each other. And we also have a prohibition of Dibah Saaretz, that we're not supposed to speak badly about the land of Israel. And that was what was considered to be the Chet HaMeraglim. Rashi, in the beginning of Parshat Shlach, draws the perhaps surprising comparison between the two, which there's a lot to say about, but not all for today, but that the juxtaposition of Parshas Balozcha and Parshas Shlach is to make the point that in the end of Balozcha we have the Chet of Miriam, which is considered to be an expression of Lashon Hara, and in the beginning of Shlach we have the Chet HaMeraglim, which is the Dibah Saaretz, and the assumption Rashi is working off of there in the Maimar Chazal that he quotes is that they're the same thing, essentially, that they have the same thread between them, and the juxtaposition shows that the Meraglim made a big mistake in not learning the lesson of Miriam. Miriam got in trouble for Lashon Hara about a person, and the Meraglim spoke Lashon Hara about the land of Israel, and that's a big mistake on their part. So there's a lot to say about that relationship. We won't go into it today, but we'll just take note for now that as far as both Isurim, so one could ask, and many do, that how could you have a prohibition of Lashon Hara? So Lashon Hara, as the Rambam defines it, and the Chofetz Chaim defines it, Lashon Hara are things that are true. Right? We've discussed in the past this year a little bit about whether or not they really are true, but let's assume for the purpose of this discussion that Lashon Hara is talking about things that are true. And Dibah Saaretz, especially, we see this more and more, people feel that they have all kinds of complaints. So they'll say, listen, I'm just speaking the truth as I see it. I'm just saying what I have to say. So how can you tell me there's any kind of prohibition about speaking the truth? So I think the answer to both questions is the same. That whatever you're complaining about your friend, or whatever you're complaining about the land of Israel, may be factually accurate. But if you truly have the proper appreciation for humanity, or the proper appreciation for the land of Israel, these things that you're talking about would not be on your radar screen. This would not be something that you would feel you have to focus on. If you really have an appreciation for who the guy next to you is, so whatever is annoying about him, it wouldn't make your awareness. It wouldn't be something that you'd be talking about. And so too, if we had a full appreciation for the full bracha of the land of Israel and everything that comes along with it, so then whatever complaints we have, we wouldn't notice them, which essentially is really the Chet HaMeraglim, right? The Meraglim, whether what they said was true or not, factually, it's a little bit of a discussion, but if what they said was factually true, then the thrust of their Avera was to not see how that pales in comparison to the bracha that's associated with it. And that's certainly one of the major themes of taking out a day such as Yom HaTzmaut to focus on the contemporary miracle of our current settlement of the land, and our current access to the land, and to recognize that all the challenges that come along with that, and whatever issues we may have, so it's not that they're false, maybe they're true, maybe they're false, but in the broader scheme of things, they're not significant. In the broader scheme of things, they pale very much compared to the bracha itself. That's the theme of the prohibition of Divas Haaretz. It's the message of acknowledging Yom HaAtzmaut and everything that comes along with it, and recognizing, of course, which is also one of the elements here, that the land is the direct gift of God, and to fail to appreciate that is an insult to God Himself, which is also how some understand the correlation between Lashon Hara and Dibas Haaretz. So let's let that those few words suffice for our focus on Parshas Tezria. And if we move to Metzora, Revi of Metzora is much longer. We won't be able to look at its totality, but we can notice that it's particularly relevant to themes of Eretz Yisrael and perhaps themes of Yom HaAtzmaut, and serves as a good synergy in a few ways. So just to take the few minutes that we have, we won't get very far in this Aliyah, it's a much longer Aliyah, but the Aliyah begins, Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe, this is Revi of Metzora, Pasuk Lamed Gimel, Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe, V'yal Aharon Lemor, Ki Savo el Eretz Kenan, Asher Ani Nosein Lochem La'achuzo, V'nasati Neged Saras B'veis Eretz Achuzoschem. Right, so here, this is telling you that when the time's going to come, and you're going to settle the land of Israel, and this particular version of Negoyim, of afflictions, Nigei Batin, the afflictions that attach themselves to a house, so that only applies in the land of Israel. That's as specific as this pasuk is connoting to us. So when you will enter into Canaan that I'm giving you as a possession, so you will see that it may happen that I will make your house subject to the affliction of the Negoyim. So you have to say, this language of Nasati, it's not a prophecy, I will do this, but this is something that could happen theoretically, especially in light of the opinion of the Gemara, that it never happened. The Gemara lists this as one of the three things. Abayas Hamanuga is one of the three things, according to the Gemara, one opinion of the Gemara said had never happened. It's more here for our Drosh V'Kabbal Schar, for our analysis and our benefit in learning from it, so we will proceed to do that. But the thrust of the pasuk is that theoretically this could happen upon your entry into the land of Israel. Chazal have an idea that the Rambam expresses in his Mishnah Torah as well, and a few others express, it's in the Tanchuma and it's in the Rishonim, that it's part of the special benefit that the Jews have, that the Kadosh Baruch Hu is trying to give them a hint slowly, that instead of going right to giving them bodily afflictions, so we started to remove. First, our house gets hit, and that hopefully should set us straight. And if that doesn't set us straight, so then there's the potential of our clothing getting afflicted. And hopefully that should do it. And if that doesn't do it, so then you come to actual negayim on the body. So that, some point out, it seems to contradict, or at least call attention to a different idea, that one of the averis, we said before, there are many averis that are associated with Negoyim, so one of them is Choshed Biksherim, somebody who suspects the innocent. And in that context, it says, the Gemara, that HaChoshed Biksherim Lokeh Begufo, that somebody who engages in such unwarranted suspicion, so he is bodily afflicted. So it sounds like you don't have this whole progression, but we go right to the bodily afflictions. So in the Sefer Chavetzel Sashar, he has a discussion about this, and he suggests, and notes the Tanchuma, and says that the problem, Choshed Biksherim, if you suspect the innocent, so you don't really think it's an Aveira, you don't think you're doing anything so terrible. And that's why people do it, and they don't realize that they are doing something terrible. In their mind, they are turning an innocent person into a guilty person. That is a terrible thing, so it's not appreciated as an Aveira, and really it is. So he suggests that that's why this whole process, the slow process, is not going to work, because your house will get afflicted. You think, okay, I'm doing something wrong, I better stop it. You're not even going to recognize that you're doing something wrong. So it needs a more direct approach, so it goes straight to Loka Begufo. But there is much discussion about the Rashi on this pasuk, which is really quite fascinating. But here this pasuk says, you will go into the land of Canaan, and v'nasati neged saras. Sounds like a gift. Guess what? coming to Israel, here's what I'm getting for you. It seems like it's a positive spin. So says Rashi, v'nasati neged saras, b'suru hilohem, here's news, guess what? Hanegayim boyim aleihem, you're going to get negayim, isn't that wonderful? So why is that wonderful? So Rashi says, l'fishit munu, shehit minu, amoroyim, Amorim, rather, the Amorites, they hid matmonia shalzav bekiris batehem, kol arbaim shana shahayu yisrael b'midbar, they hid gold in the walls of the houses, and now, al yidei hanega, no se sabayis umatan, so you're going to have to take down the walls, and oh, you'll get rich. Isn't that great? So there's a lot that's hard to understand about that Rashi, about that Medrash. First of all, it's supposed to be a punishment, so you know, this doesn't seem like we're going in the right direction here. And also, then, you know, which way is it? So if you want to say that it's not a punishment, so this is kind of a strange way for things to happen. So there is much discussion about this, many approaches we'll just mention quickly. So in the Sefer Mishkan Betzalel, so he quotes with David Pardo, that here, this is a little bit more positive, that the whole idea of Nigei Batim, so that represents a higher level. That if you look at the language, so when it comes to this Nigei Batim, so it sounds like the person brings the Shaila himself to the Kohen. The Pasuk says, Uvalo Asherlo Habayis. So he who has the situation in his house, he comes on his own. While in the context of clothes, it says, Veheres HaKohen. It's not really clear whether he's doing it himself or not. And the context of the Negayim on the skin, it says, Vuhuva El HaKohen. He is brought to the Kohen. It sounds like other people are bringing him. So there is a progression of awareness that it's the most spiritually sensitive people who are able to respond to the Nigei Batim. And they, even when they could say, okay, there's something wrong with the paint, the contractor messed up, they could ignore this, but they recognize you got to step up to the plate and they come and bring the issue to the Kohen. So that's a higher madrega of sensitivity. While the person who had to wait until it actually hit his skin, and then he still didn't get it, then he still had to be brought by somebody else. So that's the lower level of sensitivity. And indeed, it makes sense that the person who is so aware, so for him, this is a good thing. This is the kind of personality that being set straight at an early stage is a pure source of bracha, and therefore, that's why it's represented the way it is. Parenthetically, for some very significant synergy, so there is a discussion to be had here in the Sefer Chavetz Chaim, and he talks about it, that this idea of v'huval ha-kohen, that the person who has it on his skin, so he's brought to the Kohen, so the Rush in his commentary to Negayim, Perek Gimel Mishneh Beis, the Rush uses guess which language to explain this? Synergy? Kofinoso! That this person who may decide not to act on his own, so we will force him, we will compel him to come to the Kohen and ask the Shaila. So over there in the Sefer Chavetz Chaim, and so he notes that it's basically, seems to be there are three shitas in what the obligation is here. That the Rush, it sounds like, this is an expression of our Gemaras, of our this Gemaras this semester, of Kofen al Mitzvos, that it's a mitzvah to go to the Kohen and check it out. And if somebody doesn't do this, so then you'll have to compel him. So the kfiyah that we've been talking about. Even Ezra on the Pasuk sounds a little bit differently, and it sounds like the idea of investigating these negayim is really an obligation on Klal Yisrael. It's not just the mitzvah of the person who actually has them. So if somebody else notices that his friend has them, so it's also his mitzvah. So therefore that's why it could be in the passive sense, not necessarily about kfiyah ha-mitzvos, but about the particular parameters of this mitzvah. And in addition to that, the Sefer HaChinuch, he understands, is a different position. But the Sefer HaChinuch says, what is the mitzvah here? The mitzvah is that you should not ignore this, that if something is going on of this sense, that you're supposed to be aware, as we said, that's spiritually sensitive, and therefore that's what's alluded to here. So there are many discussions of this medrash, of this idea. The Sefer Yunam Baparsha of Rabbi Heschel Reisman. So he notes, okay, so yes, we have somewhat of a tension here. Is this good or bad? Is it a punishment or is it a bracha? So he says, well, it is a punishment because if it's just about getting you gold, so presumably there are ways that Akash Baruch Hu could get gold to you without having your house destroyed. That's kind of like the insurance, right? So, you know, they get the insurance, maybe that's good, but you have to go through the calamity. So the gold is good, but you have to get through the calamity, so that's bad. But the good news is that it's a tikkun, that this is going to help. So the nature of the tikkun is interesting. Now, the idea of negoi batim, so Chazal tell us that really it's for not so much lashon hara, but for tsaras ayin, for somebody who's stingy. So the Gemara says in the Maseches Yuma, you just kind of imagine this playing out. The Gemara in Daf Yud Aleph in the Maseches Yuma says that the person is stingy, so there's a mitzvah to lend property. It's a whole discussion by itself. We talked this semester about the mitzvah to lend money to people who need it, and this relationship to tzedakah. So the assumption is, based on the Tshuva Saran and others, that there is a mitzvah to lend property to. It correlates to a lot of things. So the idea of lending property, that if somebody asks for some help, so you're stingy, you'll say, oh, I don't have that, I can't help you, I don't have any such thing. And then your house gets hit with negoyim, and then you have to take all the stuff out, and it's really awkward as you're taking out this exact item that the person was looking for, and you're schlepping it out of your house, and everyone sees. So that's going to be embarrassing. So in that sense, it is a tikkun for the tzaras ayin. And it's interesting, especially, that there is a medrash here. Chazal has a comment about this focus on Canaan in the pasuk, that Yikisavo alerts Canaan. So who's Canaan? So the Chazal say that this is a reference to Eliezer, Ever Avram, who was descended from Canaan. So he went from Orer to Baruch. Canaan is from Cham. Cham was cursed. So Eliezer was descended from him. He was cursed. And he, through his service to Avram, he was able to flip it from being cursed to being blessed, from Arad to Baruch. Chazal tell us that originally he wanted his daughter to marry Yitzchak, and Avram said it's not going to work, it's a mixed marriage between Arad and Baruch, and it's not Kedai, but ultimately Eliezer himself becomes Baruch through this service. So Chazal have this medrash over here, and they say that here Eliezer transformed himself. So that's what it says here. As if there's some connection between the two, between Eliezer's transformation and what this pasuk is telling us. So in the Sefer Yunin Beparsha by Heschel Reisman, so it's the father of Ritzvika Reisman. So he explains over there that here you see the whole connection, that Cham was cursed. Why was Cham cursed? Because of what he did to Noach. Why did he do that to Noach? So the goal was that he didn't want Noach to have any more children, because if there would be more children, so he'd have to split his inheritance, which presumably was pretty generous at that point. There was not much competition in the world. So the idea, he doesn't want to compete with another sibling. So that's an extreme stinginess. So that's the midah that is being passed down here. Until you get to Eliezer, Eliezer is the opposite. Because if it's true, Eliezer wanted his daughter to marry Yitzchak, so you can imagine how disappointing it is. So here Avram says, no, it's not Shaiach. So not only does he accept that, but he then throws himself fully into the mission of getting the appropriate shidduch. So that's the opposite of tzaras ayin. That's the ability to say, okay, if it's not for me, I'll help for somebody else. And that's tremendous. And he goes on to say, especially, that so this idea that it applies particularly in Eretz Yisrael, so that makes sense all the more so, because the idea of tzaras ayin is a consequence of an attitude of kochi ve'otzem yodi asli yisachayla, that a person thinks that, okay, whatever I have because I earned it, because I worked hard, so they're all the more so going to say it's for me and only me. And the whole point of Eretz Yisrael is we're not supposed to have that attitude, but to recognize that this is a Kadosh Baruch Hu's gift, and we have the right to be stingy with it. And therefore, it's particularly in that context that that's the message. Our friend Rabbi Simon Shlita has a discussion about this Medrash also in his Sefer Imrei Baruch, and he notes also that the Medrash says as well that the Sefiras HaOmer that we're in now, the Talmidim Rabbi Akiva, which the Gemara in Yivama says, Neshul Nehavim Kavod Tzavazad, but the Medrash has a lashon of Tzaras Ayin, that they were stingy with their Torah, they didn't want to share their Torah, and that was why they died. And so all the more so, during this Tekufa specifically, we're looking to fix that. Therefore, he notes also the idea of Torah's Chesed. The Gemara says in Sukkah that when the Pasuk says Torah's Chesed, a Torah of kindness, the Gemara says, V'chiyesh Torah shel Chesed, V'torah she'eino shel Chesed, what is a special kind of Torah? So the Gemara says, yeah, a couple of possibilities. One of them is Torah al-Manas l'lamda. If you're looking to teach the Torah, that's Torah's Chesed. So that's the opposite of this Tzara's Ayin. And one could also maybe suggest, you know, the question was asked about the placement of Yom HaTzmaut in the middle of Svira. So if this is the idea to conquer this Tzaras Ayin, and Yom HaTzmaut is about recognizing this gift and not saying the Kofi V'Yotzim Yadi, then one could argue that whatever the practices are in terms of conflicting with the Avelus practices, but the whole experience of Yom HaTzmaut is itself an endorsement then of the theme that Svira is meant to direct our attention to, and perhaps that's relevant. And just to mention for another minute or two that there is a very lengthy essay about this Medrash, which I think is a little more relevant, that appears in the Sefer Asufas Marachas, of Karen Biavna, of Goldfuss, where he talks about this Medrash at great length, and he highlights that the idea is that here we are coming to the land, and this is itself a whole new phase of existence, and it's a tremendous bracha, and perhaps that's what's being conveyed by Vinasati, you know, I'm giving this gift of Negayim, so it seems bad, but it really reflects something very profound. It reflects the fact that we have responsibility now. We're able to be accountable, and we're able to have issues to attend to because we have our own land. That's a bracha. And that in the Midbar, so we know the Midbar was all a miraculous existence we're taking care of all those years. That's fantastic, but as many Mefarshim emphasize, when we enter into the land of Israel, it's a whole different life. Now, it's not about overt miracles, it's about more subtle miracles, but there's a lot of physical labor, there's a lot of work that has to be done now, as opposed to very strong contrast to the life of the Midbar. And that comes with responsibility. So that itself is a bracha. So even if that means negayim, but that's a sense, a reflection of the tremendous bracha that's involved. And of course, it's a very powerful message on Yom HaTzmaut to think about all that entails. And he goes on to say about how the idea that of finding the gold of the Amorim is about taking that which was left there and used for bad purposes and making it into something glorious and, so to speak, redeeming it, breaking down the house and getting the gold out of it and turning it to good ends. And that all of this physical effort that's going to be required in terms of settling the land, that's all a part of that process, and that's ultimately a bracha, even though it has to come with these kinds of challenges. And that's also, as he says, that's what the Medrash was talking about Eliezer, that Eliezer was somebody who was able to take the challenges he was confronted with and make something fantastic about it. That here Eliezer, so he knew, the Chazal also tell us, okay, he was cursed and by his descendancy from Canaan, to be a slave. So he figured, okay, you know, I'm going to end up being someone's slave. So what should I do? I'll become a Avram slave. So that way I'll forestall this nevuah about being a slave, but I'll do something fantastic with it. And that was the best move. That was brilliant. So he indeed took his circumstances of slavery and used them in the best possible way. And because of that, he was ultimately Zoche to become Baruch. And that was also the idea, especially with the stage in the middle, then when he told Avram, you know, you guys are looking for a Shidduch, you know, I think I know somebody, I have a daughter, and I'm not saying, just so you know. And then Avram said, it's really not Shaykh, so you can imagine, you know, how disappointed he is, right? So again, that's a big blow. And yet he takes that and says, okay, I'm going to go and use this to now take my mission and make sure I get the best possible Shidduch for Avram. So this is this Midah of Eliezer constantly taking his situation, all the challenges, and embracing them head on and turning them around. So that's what this is, the message of entering into the land of Israel. And that's what this pasuk is telling us, that you'll come to the Eretz Achuz Aschem, and there'll be challenges with that, there'll be things that seem negative, but all of that is reflective of a much deeper bracha, and it would seem to be a phenomenally appropriate message for Yom HaTzmaut. So there's more to say, but I think we're out of time, but I want to delay the Sukkot Soda. So hopefully we see in these few minutes some of the themes, some of the synergy that we can experience to look at these ideas in the Parsha and feel an even stronger connection to the bracha that we're appreciating today.